You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and we're back for a brand new episode this week with a little bit of a shakeup of how we're going to do things. And I'll talk to you all about that in a second. I'm actually very excited. I think it's going to blend a lot of things that we've been doing on the show that people have, like yourselves, have been enjoying. And we're going to make the show hopefully better, more entertaining, more informative, all that good stuff. Before we dive in, as usual, we'll give a couple very quick announcements. Be sure to like, subscribe, share the show with other wine drinking friends, family, colleagues, whatever the case may be. We hugely appreciate the support. It's been an immense amount of fun getting this out into the airwaves. And the more folks that will lend us their ear, the better we do on the interweb algorithm thingamabob, all that good stuff. So be sure to rate, review, like, share, subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming your podcasts. In that same vein, for more regular updates, check us out on our social networks. You can find us on YouTube with plenty of fun updates, including the video version of this podcast where you can see me dance around my office here. You can check us out on Instagram, the social network formerly known as Twitter, as well as the Book of Face. Be sure to head to our website, mtgawines.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there. By the way, in the description of the video is a link to our summer newsletter, just in case you want to check it out, see what there is to see. You can also sign up for our wine club, check out a little bit more about, you know, the wines we produce, all that good stuff. Insert shameless self-promotion here. Please be 21 years of age or older to do any of those things. All right, let's just go ahead and dive right into it, shall we? Let's talk about the show for a second. We're going to talk about it just for a hot second. This is, and as you know, like, we've missed a couple of episodes over the last, you know, there's always a couple because of, like, travel, you know, I get a little lethargic and run out of things to talk about. And that's what I'm trying to remedy, you know, because historically, over the course of doing this for a few years now, I've tried to pick a topic and be like, hey, here's what we're talking about today. And that's worked, I think, for the most part. But then I hit these ruts where there's just really not a lot going on. There's not like a lot to talk about. And that happened in June for sure, which is why we missed an episode and it was like, okay, well, I just don't like, there's nothing, I can't fill the time. And I've been like, over, I took a week and was like, okay, let's figure out how to do it. And that's why last week when we did kind of like the catch up episode and talked a little bit about just like stuff, I was like, this kind of works. Like, instead of like focusing on like just one topic, and I'm sure there'll be episodes down the road where there's, you know, hey, we're going to like dive into this one thing. And we're going to, you know, really kind of dig into this rabbit hole. I'm sure we'll do that again. But I think what I'm going to try and do in lieu of some of that, and maybe some of you agree with this, like try and like cover a few things. Kind of blend a little bit of like our Q&A episodes that we do at the end of each month into some of the other monthly episodes of like, here, instead of spending like 40 minutes on one topic, I'm going to have, I have a running list now next to me here of what we did last week, kind of things that are on my mind this week. And we're just going to see where the conversation goes. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. And it's going to be just a running list. I mean, it's so totally random. Like, this list goes everything from, like, sulfites and additives to health influencers to winery marketing, you know, why the great market's so fucked up, you know, and also why the inverse Kramer thing is real and actually works. I know that's a random one out of left field. We'll try and get to that at some point. It's hilarious. The short story is Brittany, the HBIC, had a wedding at a Mayakama Country Club not a couple of weeks ago. Jim Cramer happened to be there. And I was like, oh, he sounds and looks just like he does. Big surprise. But it reminded me of like the meme account on Twitter that is the inverse Kramer that basically just does the opposite of what he does, and they make a boatload of money. For like that just was in the world of like hospitality and like what we do, and like somehow these random people, celebrities or not, that we're exposed to. And I was like, holy shit, I forgot about that thing. And I looked it up. I'm like, oh, this actually, you know, this portfolio is doing better than it should, considering it's the opposite. But maybe he's just, you know, that maybe he's just like the canary in the coal mine for, hey, do the opposite. Which is funny because a new thing, I saw this also on X the other day, total tangent, by the way, total tangent, was he created a like a new thing called Park, P-A-R-C. And it's funny when you flip that around, it's actually crap. Considering the inverse Kramer is like a real thing. I wonder if you realize that. He's got to be just living up to the meme at this point. It's hilarious. Anyway, we digress from the wine industry. It's so funny. That's the little things I'm finding entertaining this summer. It's been slow. All right, I'm trying to keep myself entertained. There are far more important things going on in the world of wine and hospitality than, hey, I ran into Jim Cramer at this wedding. Like, cool, albeit I got finger guns from him. That was rad. He's like, hey, how you doing? That was funny. That was pretty funny. Anyway, we're moving on. We're going to get past that. I'm glad I could check that off the list because, man, that's been like stuck in the back of my head for weeks now. I'm like, I need to tell somebody. So you all got to know that story now. Congratulations. You're welcome. All right. So we're going to try and tackle a lot more topics. And there's one that came up again, constant contributor to the show who does us a solid, Mike, out in the Carolinas, sent me an amazing email about kind of like the health kick world of wine, how sulfites impact people in wine, along with like some health influencer stuff. And I was just like, it took me a few days because I read through it once and I was like, I don't really know what to do about this, say about it. It blew my mind. I wasn't surprised. I mean, it seemed like this is what the internet does now. Anytime there's like something remotely trendy is that you have a bunch of grifters that jump on board and just like, hey, this is how you need to be living. And by the way, here's my 10-step program that you can buy from me. And also here's my Amazon marketing link to the thing you need so that I can get a commission on this product I'm, you know, shilling out for. That was my first impression. And it was, again, this is all about like sulfites and additives in wine and this, that, and the other thing. And it was from I don't know if they're a couple or just like two fitness or health influencers or whatever. And it was just filled with like information that just wasn't accurate. But it was disguised as like good stuff, right? Because there was some reasonably decent information. And then there was like a lot of nonsense. And it just is like, okay, you know, for someone who's not going to sit there and like ask questions about this email blast and who these people are and what they're saying, it's going to be really easy to buy into this, especially with a lot of narratives in wine right now about how there's so many additives and you need to be worried about sugar and you need to be worried about this and that and all these other things. It's easy for these kind of grifting folks to be like, this is it. This is what I need to sell you, and you need to buy my program, and this is how to look for wine and shop for wine, and here's our wine list, and you can buy it from me for X amount of dollars, so you know what wine you're getting is good, and by the way, buy this little filter that's totally snake oil, but don't worry about it, it's fine, you know? But it's rooted in some sense, like this is how cults start, like it's rooted in some truth. That, hey, there are a lot of additives in wine. The overwhelming majority of wines don't disclose what they use in their production. And you have people now saying, hey, this is a problem. True. Hey, this needs to change. Also true. And, oh, pay me money so I can tell you how to change it. That's where it gets a little fucked, right? So these health influencers are the worst. They're just the worst. There's some decent information out there, but a lot of them are the worst. They're just grifting and they're trying to cash in on the trend. 100%. Now, in this particular situation, like, the good information they had that I was able to like distill down from like this, you know, this thing was like, hey, if you're truly worried about like extracts, additives, you know, things of that nature, buy organic, buy biodynamic wines. Good information. That's good information. If you're truly worried about it, you know, whether it's the food you eat or what you're drinking, buy organic. That's great. That's great. Organic is a great, great benchmark for figuring out like what you're actually putting in your body and that, hey, at least I'm putting in like things that are fine, that come from the earth, right? They're not heavily processed, manufactured garbage, right? Fair enough. Biodynamic even takes it a step further. Whether or not you believe in phases of the moon and how things happen in the ether, fine. But biodynamic farming is great. It's a great farming practice. Is it a little woo-woo-y? A little bit of voodoo? Yeah, it's a lot of that, actually. But take it for what it is, right? You're trying to have a regenerative farming practice. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Does it make the wine objectively better? No. Is it better for the land than conventional farming? I would argue yes. Do you need to dance naked in the vineyards during a full moon? Not necessarily. If you want to do that, please, go for it. You know, have at it. That's fine. Do whatever you got to do. Okay? It's all good. But the main thing, like, in this, like, oh, I was so, this is what frustrated me about this email. And it was about sulfites. It's always about sulfites. Like they mentioned Mega Purple and, like, other stuff. I'm like, okay, but, like, that's tip of the iceberg. They did mention dimethyl dicarbonate, also known as Velcorin, which I'm like, that is the Death Star. Like, it technically has a half-life. You need a special machine and a hazmat suit to be able to work with it around it. It's been used in the beverage industry since the late 80s. We're talking Gatorade, Sunny D, like, anything with that. It has a decent amount of sugar and could potentially spoil. It needs to be shelf stable. It's been used forever. Now, I'm of the opinion that if you have to use a hazmat suit to apply it, I don't want it anywhere near my wine. There are other people that disagree. Fine. Whatever. I'm never going to use it. That's my own opinion. You know, is what it is. So again, like this article, this email had like good information. Like, hey, maybe you want to know what dimethyl dicarbonate is, how toxic it actually can be. But understand that maybe like a lot of, you know, new age like herbicides and pesticides theoretically has a half-life and breaks down over time and then is not harmful to humans anymore, right? Like that's the selling point on a lot of this stuff. You know, if I'm gonna like try and steel man the other side of it, fine. But whatever, like ignore that. The sulfites, man. Like sulfites are not the problem. I don't know who needs to hear this anymore. I mean, actually, apparently a lot of people need to hear it still. So sing it from the rafters, people. Like, sulfites are not the problem. They're not. They are in just about everything. Any canned good, any dried fruit, meat. It used to be in, like, salad bars and, like, the mist that would spray over things in the grocery store because they needed to stay fresh and leafy and green as a very low dose in that water. It's not just water, my friends. At least it didn't used to be that. It used to be a thing. I don't know if they've changed it. I haven't talked to, you know, a produce person in Safeway in a while, but you never know. The allergy to sulfites is a lot like celiac disease, right? If you have it, it's a real problem. Like, gluten is off the menu, boys. Like, that's the thing. If you want to be gluten-free because your tummy hurts when you eat a lot of pasta, fine. That's fine. You can either do that or just cut back on your portions. Okay? Like, also, everyone should know this. Your body is going to be different than mine, different than your partner's, different than whomever's. Certain people can tolerate certain things. I can tolerate spicy food really, really well. One of my best friends, who's Canadian, thinks Heinz ketchup is spicy. Different strokes for different folks, right? Certain people can tolerate certain things better. And you have to figure out what works for your body. Now, if avoiding gluten makes you feel better, less lethargic, then eat less gluten. Like, fine. But that's different than having celiac disease. That could kill you, right? Like, that's how sulfites are. You're not getting a slight headache from sulfites. If you're allergic to sulfites, you're probably having like a life-threatening problem. Like, this is how it works. So when you're shilling out like an Amazon product that says this little filter removes sulfites and purifies your wine, you're like, okay, maybe, but that's also not the issue. And if that placebo effect, if that placebo effect works for you and you feel better because of it, again, more power to you. Like, the science is not there to support that in any way, shape, or form. But if you want to stick your head in the sand and just run with it, then run with it. Okay, cool. That's fine. I am going to make fun of you a little bit for it. Right? And as long as you're cool with that, then we're friends and it'll be fine. You should know this, and many of you know this about me, is that if I'm making fun of you, that means I like you. It's like elementary school, right? If you're making fun of the person or pushing them around, that means they like you. I maintain that mentality. If I'm overtly, like, way too nice to you, then you should watch your back. That's not totally true, but I...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Do you like giving people a hard time? I talk a lot of trash. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you understand. Right. And so again, like, sulfites aren't the problem. They're not the problem. They're just not. They're not. The best research shows that it's likely a histamine thing. It's like a hay fever, right? So that's probably where, and maybe some of these filters are like, I don't know, I haven't looked into them because I think they're all snake oil, but maybe they're removing some of those histamines in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. And maybe that's what's, actually it's a correlation, not a causation that's happening here. And these wines are actually there. It's doing the thing it needs that you need it to do, but it's not doing what you think it is. Does that make sense? To make you have less of a headache when you drink certain wines. But again, there are going to be certain things where it's just like, okay, like, my body doesn't react well to certain stuff. And that's okay. So maybe you lay off, the red wine because reasons. I want to say there was something in this article. I'd have to go back and reread it, but I didn't want my head to explode. So I think there was something about, like, white wines having less sulfites in it too. And I'm like, that's not at all correct. In fact, white wines typically have more. You know why they have more? Because people want bright, fresh white wine. They don't want slightly oxidized, richer, white wine during the summer months. You know how you avoid that in some situations is sulfites are an antioxidant, right? They prevent oxidation. So if you want a very nice, crisp white wine and you want to maintain it, starting from harvest and crush, and specifically if you're trying to like inhibit malolactic fermentation, sometimes sulfites are added even before you start winemaking. You're adding it as you're pressing and getting the juice like into tank. That way you can inhibit any fermentation. That way you can inhibit malolactic conversion. So naturally you're adding a little bit more. And then you're doubling down on top of that to make sure malolactic doesn't go through and that the wine stays as fresh as possible. Very, very typically, I wouldn't be surprised, and neither should you, if white wines generally have more sulfites in them, for what it's worth. So anyone that says drink white wine because there's less sulfites, unless they ran a lab test themselves and they have a record of that, tell them to pound sand. Period. Right? This is a lot when there's a guy, I'll never forget this. There's this dude that was at a wine tasting event. Not a big wine dude, liked wine, but he's like, fitness guy, right along the same lines. Like, I was too worried about sugar. I know there's a lot of additives in wine. I know that, typically I want to avoid that because I'm trying to be like as keto friendly as possible. So very typically the only thing I drink if I'm drinking wine is Prosecco. And my jaw hit the floor. I was like, you're trying to avoid sugar, you say. You're actively trying to avoid sugar content in wine. And someone told you, let's look this up. Someone told you that, you know, Prosecco's the go-to for the driest wine you can find with no sugar content. Are you serious right now? Like, are you serious? Right now, I just Googled this, so you can, you know, double check it. And remember, this is measured in grams per liter, so we'll break it down like by the glass roughly. The Brut, the quote-unquote driest style of Prosecco, typically has less than 12 grams of sugar per liter, up to 1.5 grams per 125 milliliter glass. This is like a quick Google search, right? So you could be right. There could be less sugar in it. Maybe. You also have the extra dry, which is 12 to 17 grams of sugar per liter, about 2 grams per glass. You have dry, which is technically 17 to 32 grams of sugar, up to 4 grams per glass. And then you have the demi-sec, which is the slightly sweet, which is more than that. So this person, and I bless his heart, was like, someone told me that there's less sugar in this, so I'm going to go with it. And what he doesn't know is that there could actually, in theory, be up to like 4 grams or so per glass, but because the wine is bubbly and acidic, you don't notice the sugar as much. And maybe let's give him the benefit of the doubt in saying he was drinking the Brut, the driest of the dry, and that he's only getting a gram or so of sugar per glass. I'm like, okay, but is that gram of sugar per glass like still within the macros that you're trying to like achieve from a health and like, you know, thing? And then the reality is the dude had no idea. He had no idea. He's just going off of somebody's advice, and that's fine. And if you feel good about it, great. But if for some reason you're not staying in ketosis and you're crushing Prosecco like it's going out of style, there's probably a reason for that. Unless you're cheating on your off day, you're lying to yourself and you're eating a donut, you know, every morning with your coffee. If you're lying to yourself, it's fine. You know, do say whatever you got to say. So, you know, this is where, like, if I ended up on that email list and they said all this stuff, I would immediately start like, hey, I like what you have to say, but can you, like, where are you getting this information? Can you cite your sources? Can you send me to a website or a study or a lab report or something that kind of backs up what you're saying here? Because these are a lot of like very, you know, there's a lot of data that would need to go into statements such as this. And this is why this influencer culture, I hate it so much, is because you do have people that just, you walk in like you own the place. You say it with confidence. You start a newsletter. You start selling something. And then all of a sudden you have street cred, even though it's a total scam, right? And I, you know, I will give like folks in this newsletter that I'm talking about, like the benefit of that, like they're trying to help in a way that they see maybe, right? Maybe they're really genuine and trying to be helpful, and they're just not they're just not in it. They don't know the science behind it, and they're trying to educate themselves along with their followers. Like, that's all good. I will give you the benefit of the doubt. But the second you start, you know, trying to sell a product based on kind of false information or just wrong information, now I have a problem with you, because it's clear you're either speaking in wide sweeping generalizations to try and get clicks and bait people into buying your product, or you're just ignorant of what's actually happening. Ugh. It's just like that kind of marketing is just absolute trash. Absolute trash. I cannot stand it. Cannot stand it. It's so annoying. Ugh. So actually, speaking of trash, I saw this kind of related, but not really. I saw this Instagram post of, I can't remember what winery it was. I honestly can't, because I laughed and then kept scrolling when I was laying on the couch the other night. But like wine marketing, are we still in like 2008? Like, okay. I understand, because I'm one of these people, like us winemakers, vineyard people, like we like our alone time. We love working in the cellar. We don't like talking to people. There's a layer of introvert in all of us that just wants to be left alone so we can make good wine. That's how the overwhelming majority of us winemakers are, period. We can handle being in crowds. We don't mind being cordial and entertaining and sharing, you know, a great experience or a dinner with people. But believe it, like when I get back from like a wine dinner or a tasting, like I need a break. Like it's exhausting. I'm not an extrovert where I like feed off of energy of other people. It does drain me. And that doesn't mean I hated having that experience. It's just I'm tired. Okay? It's fine. But I saw this video of this, you know, winemaker who got conned into, you know, promoting their rosé for like the summer. And then I can't, like the winery marketing, it's just so bad. Like this newsletter was one thing, but this is like now this is just like people in the industry, like no enthusiasm. It was quite literally this. I'm going to do my best impersonation of it. And the fact that people are still allowed to post this kind of stuff on the internet is just, it's beyond me, because it's not relatable. It's not interesting. It's not exciting. It does nothing to promote your brand in like a positive way. It's in fact, it just gets ignored. Like it's like net neutral, right? It's not bad. It's not good. It just sucks, right? But it was, this guy literally popped online, was like, hello. And you could tell like there's clearly a tripod involved. Like someone's filming this and editing it and posting it on the gram, right? And he's like, hello, my name is Winemaker from this winery. Never mind that you follow this Instagram account, you know, if you're a follower of it, you know what winery it is, but that's beside the point. And I'm here to promote our 2024 Rosé of blah, blah, blah. It is a bright, refreshing summer sipper with hints of strawberries and honeysuckle. And we harvested this last fall and bottled it in the winter, so it would be here in time for spring. And like at that point, I was like, guy, you're not, stop it. Just stop. You might as well not do it. Like you think you're doing yourself. Oh, it's so frustrating. It reminded me of a time in marketing this. And this would have been 2012 or 13. Cause I was, adding kind of a redirect. And this is, by the way, this is how this works. For those of you that don't know how this works, this is why you see ads of certain products online on your phone, other than it listening to you, which they totally do. Let's be real here. It's a cookie. It's a redirect. So whenever you abandon a shopping cart somewhere and you get an email from that company saying, hey, don't forget about your shopping cart. That's how that works. It's targeted ads, whether it's via email or, you know, the pop-up ads on other sites that follow you around the internet. This has been around forever, because they're trying to continue to entice you to buy whatever they're selling. I remember explaining cookies and these targeted ads and how they follow you around the internet to a group of people at Boisset Family Estates. And there were a couple of people that were like, oh, these companies are like following me. Like these cookies are following me. Like, I don't feel good about that. Like that's like, they're tracking me. I'm like, yeah, they're trying to sell you something. Like that's when you accepted all the cookies on the website, that's what that does. It saves your preferences. It follows you around. You get ads targeted to you. Like I know full well that if I look up like a particular like watch company, because I have a watch problem I don't need, that I'm probably on Instagram, Twitter, just browsing the internet, I'm probably going to see ads for that watch company, because that's what they do. They save a cookie on your system so that they can follow you around the internet and try and continue to sell you on stuff, right? What was the point of this conversation? I completely lost my train of thought. But that's how marketing works. Like then that was like, you know, people were scared of that back in the day. It's still ubiquitous today. Like, let's be real. I mean, even for our shopping cart on our website, we say, hey, if you're on our mailing list or you entered your email and you left a shopping cart without checking out and buying, you get an email saying like, hey, don't forget about these wines you were interested in. Like, that's just marketing. Like one, it's not even 101. That's like grade school marketing at this point. When you're out there, like trying, like, all right, kudos to this winemaker for like trying to make the effort, because I've, you know, having worked in and around marketing around other winemakers that wanted nothing to do with this kind of stuff, like, I get it. You don't want to do it. In fact, there are times I don't want to do it. So I appreciate whoever this marketing person is convincing that winemaker to, like, go out on a limb and, like, do this thing, because, you know, that's what I tried to do across many different brands. And the winemaking team was like, yeah, we're not doing that. I'm like, yeah, but we're trying to bring people, like, into the cellar and have them understand, like, what goes into winemaking on a day-to-day basis. And they're like, no, they're, like, not even remotely interested in sharing anything on the interweb about, you know, the day-to-day of a winemaker in Napa or Sonoma. It was like pulling teeth when I was working for Boisse to get content from anyone on the production side. No hate. That just is what it is, right? So kudos for this winemaker for getting out there and, you know, trying to extol the virtues of the rosé they made. However, just pretend to be remotely enthusiastic about what you do. You know, like pretend like you're having a good time, like you're actually excited that you made this wine and that people are going to drink it. And maybe pat you on the back for making a great rosé. Like, be happy that people enjoy your art form. And listing off flavors and characteristics and how long the cold fermentation was does not matter to people. Because, you know, especially winos, like people who are into wine and following you because they're into wine, they understand what some of this stuff is. Even anecdotally, they kind of wrap their head around it. And those that don't will ask those questions. So you can be kind of leading and kind of farm engagement in that way. It's no different than the Q&A episode that we do on the show here. It's like, hey, I'm actually asking you guys, the audience, to participate. And I kind of farm engagement that way. Because one, it's a lot of fun. Two, hopefully we're answering the questions that you're most interested in. So you can kind of build that community within your marketing efforts without having to be like too salesy about it, right? It can be like just a good, like, grassroots kind of vibe. It's fine. It's difficult. It is difficult. I'll give you that. It is difficult to kind of maybe wrap your head around that mentality. Sure. Whatever. But what's more important, like, if you're trying to sell a rosé, number one, rosé is a flooded market. It's a tough sell right now because everyone's got rosé coming out of their ears. So how are you going to, like, promote your rosé as, like, a thing? And this is kind of how, I mean, we promote our wines. It's very simple. It's, how does this fit into your day-to-day life, right? If you're going to be slinging rosé, how does that fit into your consumer's life? You know, for us and what Brittany started doing with Blair Payton Wines, it was like, these are your patio pounders. This is by the pool, on the boat. This is on the golf course. This is whatever you're doing on a nice warm day and you need something cold and refreshing. You need a glass of wine next to you. And all of a sudden you're like, boom, instant connection. You're like, hey, I like hanging out by a pool. I like rosé. I would love to drink rosé by the pool. And now you're pitching free marketing advice. This is bullshit marketing advice, by the way. This is like, again, 101 level stuff, but it's like, create the scene for people. Create the vibe. Create, you know, the rationale. Saying your name, hi, I introduce myself at the beginning of every show because it's like, hey, maybe some people are new here. They're not used to listening to this podcast. They don't know who I am, my experience and what I've done in the industry. So it's like, okay, let me introduce myself. I don't need to necessarily, you know, give you the synopsis of what this show is at the beginning. We just kind of dive right into the content after a couple of quick announcements. So, you know, say who you are, what you do, because if maybe people don't know who the winemaker is, fine. Introduce yourself real quick. And then move on to something that's very relatable. You know, if you're talking about day-to-day cellar work and the cold soaks of your reds and how you extended the maceration and, you know, how you use 225 liter French barrels for, you know, 18 months before putting the blends together and bottling after 22 months. Like, that's cool detail, I suppose, for the folks that are, like, really interested in, like, production techniques. No hate to you guys out there that geek out on that kind of stuff. But that's a very, you all are the 0.0001% of wine drinkers. There's a lot more fish in that pond that just want to know how these wines fit into their like day-to-day life. So like just tell them that this rosé is crushable by a pool and try not to sound so damn monotone. Be excited. You're going to be on the World Wide Web. You're going to score all of the internet points and win the game, whatever that game is. It's funny because even like during some of the big conferences and stuff around the Valley and in the industry, there are still people talking about why is social media important for marketing? And I'm just like, oh, you guys. I mean, it is and it isn't. Like you can kind of make it whatever you want it to be. Like it just find your lane. Like I know full well that like once we started posting videos, once we started posting the podcast here, I'm like, oh, people like this content. People are enjoying it. The audience isn't huge, but that's fine. Like there are people, I like doing it very selfishly. And there are, I mean, for the most part, I mean, social media still annoys me to hell and back, but you know, I find joy in it when people pick up like little tidbits of information or we kind of interact here on the show or whatever the case is. Like it warms the cockles of my heart. At a certain point, right? So, you know, you find a lane that you kind of like and just do the best you can with it, but be at least a little bit enthusiastic. You know, like winery marketing is just so bad. It's so bad. But it's interesting. I was actually part of a photo shoot yesterday as I'm recording this on the 15th of July. So day before we're going to post this, but I was in a photo shoot this Monday, which I haven't done, I think, since my days at Cliff or definitely, you know, Raymond and Boisset before that, because we did a lot of marketing shoots and things of that nature. I hadn't been a part of these in a while. And it was everything that was like being planned for like gift. A lot of it was, you know, lifestyle, kind of like cool photos, really great photo team. I don't remember who the photographer was. I didn't even get her name, I don't think. But I'm very talented. The shots looked great as they were coming out of the camera there on her laptop. And a lot of it was like gifting. Like they had gift boxes and like gift baskets, like planning for their holiday marketing campaigns. Like they were really kind of gearing up for, you know, the holiday season already, which is good on them. Like you got to get a head start on it. But they did a great job of like capturing the scene and the vibe and like, hey, this is what our kind of what we want this to look and feel like. That way when people see a person holding this gift box with a couple of bottles in it, and then there's another box kind of in the background, but you see the logo and it looks really nice and clean, it kind of creates this like, oh, this just good, you know, feeling. It was very well done, very tasteful, very solid. It was great to be a part of. I haven't been a part of like a marketing campaign, you know, shoot, video, whatever, photo shoot like that in a long time. And it was just cool to see it. And it was great to see it come from somebody, you know, a friend of mine with, you know, a great photographer and, you know, folks that were like really keyed into like how they wanted the marketing to like look and feel. You know, hopefully that when those campaigns and stuff goes out and, you know, brochures and on their website or email blast or whatever, that it kind of carries through in that same way. And it's like this really solid, like, hey, this is what we want to be providing to you, to your clients, to your family, whoever you're buying these gifts for. Like, this is what we want it to be for you. This is how it fits into your day-to-day and kind of your altruistic giving or whatever it is during the holiday season or just for reasons that you need to buy somebody a couple bottles of wine, right? Like, that's a good way to go about it, I think, is find ways for your marketing to relate to, you know, how it integrate your product, whatever that may be, into the lives of the people you're trying to sell to. That seems to be the key. But what do I know? Ugh. What do I know? All right, we got a couple minutes left here. What do we want to talk about? I was looking at this the other day, actually, because we keep getting questions about the great market and how much of a mess it is. I've, you know, Brittany, during a course of a couple of events this week, have run into growers that we are no longer working with who had very luckily very nice things to say about us and working with us. And I'm like, that's really nice considering we don't work with you anymore. The grape market. I was looking back at the California Grape Crush report, and it's interesting because there's a lot of people buying fruit, you know, from Napa, like Cabernet Sauvignon, for example, at like really super low prices. So like long term contracts, or they're probably paying family for it or whatever. Like it's very low fruit costs. And then you have people that are paying like $60,000 a ton. You're like, that seems like someone's moving money around. And it's like, we're trying to think of this, like, hey, because there have been a few folks that have been like, why, you know, we're trying to get into Napa, but it's just so expensive. I'm like, this is the correction that we're in. You know, the things have kind of like continued to skyrocket for like 10, 15 years. And like, there's been no adjustment. Right. And now we're kind of seeing that adjustment happen. And I did some more averages and tried to see like, okay, like if you remove like people paying that like really low price, like a couple of like more than a few thousand dollars below the average, and you pay and you remove the people that are paying more than like a few thousand dollars above the average, like how does that all shake out? And it shakes out to be about the same. Like the average price realistically is kind of pretty close to what you would expect. But I was looking for like who, like which category of these people buying grapes in Napa are actually like fucking up the grape market? Like who's the problem? And it turns out I couldn't figure it out. I'm gonna have to like dive into that spreadsheet and really kind of do some hard math to see what really shakes out and like really weight the averages and things of that nature. But I don't know. Like it's interesting because now speaking of marketing, actually, you have growers all over the valley who have kind of fallen silent. I think they're kind of like waiting to see how they're going to market themselves and you know, sell their fruit. Like the ace in the hole for any grower for like, you know, selling their fruit is like, oh, we are, you know, again, speaking of marketing, like we're right next to this vineyard and we make really premier Napa fruit and people have really enjoyed it. And you're like, cool. Tell me more about what everybody else in the valley is doing. It's all like, it's Napa. Like all the fruit's pretty premier, you know? It is. And just because you're next to this famous vineyard, there's no transitive property here. Like just because that vineyard's across the street doesn't mean your vineyard is equivalent to it. That's not how this works. I guarantee you it's farmed differently. I guarantee you you've got, yeah, there's very likely a different clone selection. There's a different rootstock. You know, sell it. Like really sell me on it. Get better. Like be better at marketing. Be better at sales. Like convince me that I need your fruit to make the best wine I possibly can. And it doesn't, and all this shakeup of like this marketing thing like goes all the way through any industry, I suppose. But it's so interesting that there's just like, oh no, we make really premier fruit. We've owned the vineyard for this long and you should buy it. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, why exactly? And you're asking top dollar. Why should I pay you, you know, the top price for something that's not like a brand name vineyard? You know, is it just because? Is your fruit actually that good? Do you have any of this wine that's been made in the past that I can try? And you can kind of like convince me that it's that good? Or are you just growing really premier Napa grapes? That's why I always my like red herring of wine marketing. No joke. Every time I pick up a wine label and I see this wine was made from some of the most premier vineyards in Napa, I'm like, shoot me. This is the dumbest. Stop it. Stop it. No, just stop it. It's not, that means nothing. It's literally the laziest kind of marketing. Like it's so frustrating. You know what really grinds my gears is people who are bad at marketing. Apparently, that's what really grinds my gears today, is people who are bad at marketing. There's been a lot of, that seems to be like the thing right now. Like the industry's hurting, everyone's trying to get out there, everyone's trying to sell their wares, so everyone's kind of like, you know, flooding inboxes and social media and newsletters and all this kind of stuff with, you know, hey, buy from us. And some people I think are, I mean, maybe people's opinions of our marketing, like our summer newsletter is like, oh, this is kind of cheesy and not that great. I'm sure there are plenty of people who think that. So I'm probably talking out of turn here. But I think that we do a pretty good job considering what our competition is in the grand scheme of marketing in this valley. All right. I think that's a good place to end it. That's my rant for today. That health influencers are the worst and winery marketing is trash. Absolute trash. a super positive and a super positive episode today. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Looking forward to it, because we're actually, next week we will have a little bit more of a theme. We're going to be talking the 2023 vintage, because we're going to have a bottling run in less than a week come next Wednesday. So we're going to be talking about 2023, some expectations for that, kind of where we think it's going to shake out when it's all said and done. I promise not to bring up Jim Cramer anymore. As funny as that was in that experience, oh my God. And we'll see what other topics we kind of dive into. I'm excited for the 23s. It's going to be a fun episode, kind of diving into, I think, where these wines are going to end up long term. And we'll see where we go from there. So love you guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been the Wind Up Podcast, but you know that already. Be sure to follow us on our social networks at MTGA Wines. Like, subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming your podcast. And head to our website, mtgawines.com. Find out more about us and check out the link to our summer newsletter in the description of the video. Take care. We'll see you next week.